Are you ready to dive into the stories, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Field. Thomas going back. He's at the wall, and it is gone! Into the Rangers bullpen. Corey Seager with a three-run home run, and the Rangers now lead 6-1.
Matt Hicks with the call to start off the hump day edition of Sean and RJ. We have our Cowboys insider, Bobby Roberto Bell, Peyton and Aiden in the back, smack in the middle of your week, trying to get you to your weekend as quickly as possible on your home of the Cowboys and Rangers. Micah and Diggs clapping back yesterday in Oxnard, California. What happened day one at practice? That's all coming up at 6:20, a loaded show. We'll chop it up at 7:40, and then the show of whales delivering again. Brian brought us from Cali at 8:40, followed by Adam Schefter live at 9, and Brett Boone at 9:20.
Now that's how you do a guest list. You know, there's no cook. There's no cook on there. There's nobody that's like a writer.
All right.
You know, writers.
And it's no one who went to Duke. Or Texas A&M, or wherever KNC went to college.
I'll see you in Oxnard.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a whole different discussion there. So
6-2 Rangers as Marcus Semien starts it off, going yard. Josh Smith with a clutch hit opposite field for the insurance run. And then Corey Seager ended it with Jacob deGrom on the mound, gives up the early home run. 6 innings. 3 hits, shuts down the Athletics after that. 1 earned, 9 strikeouts. DeGrom moves to 10-2 on the season, and the Rangers are 2 games over .500.
Yeah, the Seager homer is one of those crush your spirit kind of home runs, kind of hits.
It was over.
Yeah, because the A's are at that point just kind of looking for a reason to pack it in. They, as we talked about yesterday, they were 22-40 in their last 62 games. They started 22-20. So they had really fallen off. And they're just like kind of like, hey, we ain't going anywhere. We got the worst part of the schedule coming up, which is August. If you have nothing, if you have nowhere to go, if you have no playoffs, you know that most of these guys or some of these guys are going to get dealt here in the next week. These are selfish at bats they're going to start taking. They're going to get out of the season. It's like they can't wait to get to September to where they can see the finish line. Because they're about to start that the dog days are called the dog days of August for a reason. You want to find any way to crush their spirit again.
After hitting 188 in the month of June, Corey Seager is now at what for July?
For the month of July or what he's at for the season?
July.
He is at 400.
359.
All right, I would have guessed in the 380s.
359 for Seager, 14 runs. Batted in, 9 walks, and 4 home runs as the engine is rolling right now in that Ranger lineup.
Yeah, it is, and they continue to do it. So the 6 runs again, that's above their 5.34 since June 7th. Number one in the sport, most runs per game in the sport since that June 7th date. DeGrom, you could see this month they were trying to tick his pitches up. You know, so they had like a bunch in a row where he was in the 80s. And in this month, they've had 3 in a row going into last night where he was in the 90s. You know, they could have thrown him out there for the 7th. And look, I mean, there was an opportunity for them to do that. But they were like, what's the point? You know, what's the point of throwing him out there? Got a lead. And let's keep him at that pitch count where he doesn't get stretched in the hundreds.
This is 2 games above .500, by the way. They've not really, they've kind of been around .500. Yeah. They haven't like fallen the way behind it. This is 2 games above .500 for the first time since May 18th for them. So you're talking about, but meanwhile, in that time, I mean, if you were to look and say, I think it's going back to June 12th, they've spent every day either 3 games below .500 or 1 game above. I mean, they're just in this like 4-game window. So finally starting to see daylight here and clearing some victories. This will be this is encouraging.
The Astros keep winning, so the Rangers are still 7.5 back in the West, but they're 1.5 back in the wild card. What I think is happening right now is the Rangers are giving Chris Young the excuse not to aggressively buy. Choppy has talked about it in terms of the runs scored, 7 runs a game. You creep in a couple of games over 500. I think that's what you're kind of looking for of your CY, an excuse not to get killed and crushed, where the fan base has settled in and said, okay, let's see what you have on the roster. Let's see what you have from within without doing anything too drastic. Now, if they go and get, I would still like a bat, and they do need a bullpen arm. If either of those two things happen, I'm going to support it. But this is, I think, what they've been looking for, an excuse not to go outside of their own clubhouse and say, let's get the actual performances we know you're capable of.
Do you think it's at all, for some fans, though, going to be the opposite? That, like, now that they're winning, it's like, no, now you need to get me something else, because now I feel like it's worth investing in. Previously, wasn't it worth investing in? Like, now you're playing well enough that it's like, you could contend. Go get something.
Or maybe the fan base is like, no, if you sleep and don't do anything major and the offense starts regressing, you screwed up your opportunity. You were in the mix. You're 1.5 games back. I don't know how people feel. Nope. I don't know if people are totally bought in and sold after we saw 100 games of a disappointing offense.
This might be...
Especially when you keep talking about Seager mainly carrying
it. So that's what I was going to say. This might be an exaggeration, and if it is, I'm sure Sandler will tell me later. Seager, it feels like, might be more important to a single lineup success than anybody else in baseball consistently. Like, if he's hitting well, it's like no one else really has to do anything other than whatever your rotating current hot guy is. Because then you've got two guys who are at least hitting consistently in the lineup, and the pitching's been good enough to where you can win with that. The biggest problem, the reason why they were floundering so much early, was either they didn't have Seager or Seager wasn't hitting. Now that he's hitting and things kind of fill in, okay, Higashioka's hitting well right now. Evan Carter's hitting good right now. Oh, okay, it's Marcus Semien's turn. As long as you're getting that around consistency from Seager, they seem to be okay.
They are 45-1 to win the World Series right now. They were 21 to start the year. 20 and then 24, depending on where you were at. I mean, for a team that's a game and a half out with those two guys at the top of rotation, you're not going to find better value.
Patrick Corbin is going to go tonight, 6-7 with a 3.91. It's sounding like Eovaldi is close. And when you look at Patrick Corbin's numbers, that's going to be a 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock first pitch. His lowest ERA after 18 starts in a season since a 3.34 mark spanning his first 18 games of 2019. And his last start marked his first scoreless start as a Ranger and longest scoreless outing since August 24 against the Yankees. This courtesy of Sandler. In 14 of his 18 starts, he's gone 5-plus innings, allowing 3 or fewer runs, went 5 2/3 in the last one against Detroit, the best team in baseball. Not bad for a fifth starter signed for $1 million. So Patrick Corbin this evening on your home of the Rangers.
That's going to be one. It's going to wind up being, the way he's done this year, one of the sport's more like unheralded offseason moves.
It's Texas's best offseason.
For sure.
Like, I mean, and the fact that it occurred when it did, and we were all talking about it just as like, you need a rubber arm for when somebody's out.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's pitching as well as he is. Because early on, it was very much, it felt like a little bit of smoke and mirrors. Like, he was still giving up a bunch of hits. He was walking people. He was getting out of jams. But, like, lately, it's just he's been pitching well.
Yeah, and look, I mean, this is kind of a, it's not an important game in the grand scheme of things. It's the A's. But when you consider the schedule coming up, you can't really afford to lose today. You play Atlanta, and then you go on the road. You got 3 at the Angels, who aren't a pushover anymore. 4 at Seattle, home to the Yankees, home to the Phillies, home to Arizona, and then at Toronto and at Kansas City. Like, that's a pretty brutal stretch. It's not the worst stretch you've ever seen.
Brutal.
I mean, look.
The Angels are 4th in their division. The Braves are 4th in their division.
Nobody thinks the Braves are bad. Like, the Braves are one of those teams that just haven't gotten it together.
Well, it's been a long time. 44-56. They're 5-5 in their last 10.
I would assume the Braves are a favorite in two of the, I mean, I had to see what the pitching matchups are going to be. Look at the Rocker and Leiter. The Braves might be a favorite in two of the three games.
The story in the sport is Rich Hill. 45 years old. Choppy's age.
I know, ooh, right?
And
damn, that's old. Imagine that?
He pitched, yeah, I know, waking up out of bed and going out and starting a major league game. And he pitched at Chicago yesterday. Five innings, one earned with three runs on the board total. They end up losing 6-0, but 5 innings, one earned. Holy crap, that's incredible.
Last night, my right leg was 2 inches shorter than my left. Okay, I had Sarah do the thing. She looked at it. She had to pull it. Oh. She had to pull the leg,
what about the third
pull
one?
It back. Pull it back into place because the hip, my hip just kind of moves on its own now. All right, 45 years old. He's out there throwing.
45.
No. This is a TJ Watt tryhard guy. You just retire. No, okay, you're 45 years old.
He's Vinatieri. He's Gary Anderson. Yeah. He's Jamie Moyer. Like, that's what he is, which good for him. He was drafted. He was initially drafted out of high school the year before Rangers GM Chris Young was drafted in the third round by the Pirates.
Wow.
He was drafted in the same draft as Twins manager Rocco Baldelli. Like, the dude's been around for forever.
This is like Bernard Longer out there still in the Masters at 60-something years old. Like, what is going on here? But he's doing, I mean, he did it. And that's not a bad night at all.
We're going to get to the clap back from Micah and Diggs at 6:20. Right now, let's focus on what actually happened at practice in Oxnard, California. We got the KNC masterpiece, and Brian brought us out there. Empty seats for day one, and Dak Prescott was back. I think this is something that we've kind of let go by the wayside. We have not talked enough about how impressive it is that Dak Prescott is out here, full participant for Cowboys practice. And he threw the first pick of camp to Marshawn Nealon, of all people. But Bobby, what else happened on the field?
Yeah, the Marshawn Nealon thing too, by the way. Everybody yesterday would say, like, all the stuff that you would hear from the reporters yesterday was like, I literally don't think he saw Nealon standing there. Because it's like this soft toss that he just snatches away from the running back. But this was yesterday, the big headline out of this is just people thinking, all right, this offense is something different right now. And that's the thing.
I saw Vach Lombardi say, I'm going to pass out 90% motion and pre-snap movement. Holy crap, what's happening?
Which is the first thing that, when we finally got into football talk with Schottenheimer at his opening press conference, when he was like outside of just the, this is why I'm ready for it. When it got down to X's and O's, the very first thing he said was motion. He was like, a lot of motions, a lot of shifts, a lot of cut splits. Like, these are the things that I believe in. And this is something that when we were talking about OTAs, which we can't divulge everything that gets shown there, so we had to talk a little vaguely about it, but it was like, you are going to watch the offense, and whether it's better or not remains to be seen. It's going to look different. It will look different to the naked eye to anybody who watches football. And yesterday, you're seeing some of the stuff we were seeing in OTAs, which is Kevontae Turpin's lined up in the backfield, taking carries as a running back, basically. Kevontae Turpin's lining up there. Then he's motioning out. Then you've got Jake Ferguson split out wide. Oh, then he's motioning back in line. This is going to be a lot of movement and a lot of motion, and that's encouraging to people. The only thing there is that it's similar to when Mike Zimmer came in here and wanted to do a lot of really big aggressive changes, and you need to have disciplined football players who know what they're doing, though.
And I talked to you about Kirk Cousins early on in Atlanta. He was drowning in the motion. He was drowning in the pre-snap movement. And this is a guy who's been in the league forever. Mm-hmm. A lot of Javonte Williams, apparently, with the ones yesterday. Mozzie Smith, right at 300 pounds. I can't keep track of what Mozzie is gaining, losing, whether he's supposed to be lighter, whether he's supposed to be heavier. And Ferguson is also lighter. I didn't know Jake had a lot of weight to lose. And John Owning, friend of the station, he kind of went after Matt Eberflus and the Cowboys for Mozzie, saying because he's supposed to play 1-3, according to Schottenheimer. And John Owning said, ham-fisting, haven't heard that, ham-fisting a player into your scheme rather than adjusting the scheme to fit the players, not ideal from Eberflus, in my opinion.
This is... There's a lot
no
of
no idea what he just said.
One
the hell is ham fisting.
No, like, you know, ham fisted, like basically it. Forcing, yeah, is what he's saying. So this is
sounds like something you need to try tonight, along with the third
this
leg.
Is, here we go, this baby. Is, attaboy.
This is it was a little funny watching people freak out about this yesterday. Because it's like we've spent months whenever people are like, well, where are you going to get one technique play? You got to remember, Eberflus is a Marinelli disciple. Do you guys not remember the Marinelli era where he didn't bring in one techniques? He doesn't believe in it. He believes in defensive tackles getting upfield. He wants smaller, penetrating defensive tackles. It's one of the trade-offs.
Are you ready to dive into the stories, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
You get, if you're expecting some monster run stuffer one technique in this defense, you're not getting it. That's not going to happen. They're going to try to stop the run in other ways, and a big part of that is aggressive, fast linebacker play, and so that's where they'll have to get it. But Mozzie being down under 300, that means they want him penetrating, getting upfield.
Trayvon said his feelings were hurt, and Micah says, if this is the end, this is the end. I'm not doing this for Jerry Jones. I'm doing this for my teammates. The clap back after practice from two of the Cowboys' biggest stars inside the star on the official home of America's team is next. Woo! We got that clap back after practice yesterday. As Clarence Hill tweeted, Jerry Jones has finally met his media match because Micah Parsons is smart, he's savvy, and he coordinated this to talk to the media. I believe it was unscheduled right there on the field. Normally they have people off at the podium. Bobby's going to have a Cowboys training camp true or false later on in the show with Brian Broaddus, live from Oxnard, Adam Schefter, Brett Boone, Rangers hitting coach. One of the questions was, is Trayvon Diggs going to speak? I would have answered no. I would have said we do not hear from Trayvon Diggs during this camp. We heard from him. He was sitting there as Micah's handler to start off, Micah's PR guy, and Parsons went in and went back at Jerry. What does it actually mean? We're going to play the audio. You judge for yourself. Tell us, please, on the Franklin Franklin Injury Attorney text line. First, let's start with what Mike actually did on the field. He did walk on the practice field. He did jog on with the rest of the players. He did not participate with a back issue. Wink. Wink. Mm-hmm.
Which he did, to be fair, he did use as the same reason why initially he wasn't doing things in minicamp before he said the back loosened up. So he said yesterday that he's just waiting for the back to loosen up. As soon as it does, then he says he's going to be out there, is allegedly his stance.
Yeah. Todd Archer said he was like holding one of the blocking pads during a drill, but he wasn't actually participating in the drill. And Brian Schottenheimer says, look, all I care about right now is that he's out there. Biggest thing for me is that he is here. So participating, but not really participating, as right now, day one, maybe a hold. Does that qualify as the hold in, or he just doesn't even approach the grass for it to be a hold in?
Yeah, generally, I mean, hold in would be not participating in drill. So it still technically probably would count as a hold in, I would guess, if that's what he was doing. But typically hold ins don't even stand in the drills and hold pads or anything.
All right, let's get to it. After practice, they gather, and Micah was asked, where are you at with the deal, and how badly do you want it done?
You know, for me, it really don't matter. Like I said, I've been pretty consistent. If they don't want me here, they don't want me here. I go about my business. I understand the nature of the business. Like I said, as long as I'm here and under contract, I'm going to do what I have to do to perform at the highest level. But if this is the end, this is the end. You know, there's same way that Jones, Jerry Jones, and Stephen Jones, and the other Jerry Jones take care of their family, it's the same way I need to take care of my family. You know what I mean? I got my own three kids of my own, so we all need to take care of our own family at the end of the day.
All right. Two little darts in there. If they don't want me, they don't want me. And if this is the end, this is the end. Pretty strong. Yesterday, I asked you guys to kind of rank Jerry's disrespect towards the holdout players over the years. Zeke, Zach, Lamb, Micah, Diggs is not a holdout, Dak is not a holdout, but they called side swipes, according to many, during the opening presser. Today, I want you to rank the aggressiveness of the players who have gone back at Jerry and whether Micah is easily the one seed after what happened yesterday. So that's part one. Follow-up with Trayvon commenting on the side. Are you frustrated it's taken this long?
Honestly, yeah, when you go around the league and you see these other teams taking care of their best guys, I see TJ got taken care of, Max got taken care of, Miles got taken care of, and he got 2 years left on his deal, so it's hard to, yeah, you see a lot of people around the league going taken care of, you just, you know, wish you had something like, you know, that same type of energy, you know.
It's hard to not take it personally.
I wouldn't say it's hard not to take it personally when you know how there's a, when there's a, you know, chain of events of something consistently happening over the course of years, when you kind of see it before through other players and things. So you don't take that you don't take it personally when you're like, all right, this, it's not like I'm getting treated differently than anyone else, you know. So I don't take it personally. I just don't understand.
That'll be one of the headlines too. It'll be, if this is the end, this is the end. If they don't want me, they don't want me. And also, I don't understand it. I just don't understand it.
I mean, look, it's a situation now where Jerry is so dug in. Like, if he was going to sign him and he was going to save money on the next term, I mean, that day is already passed.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's about, do you want him in camp? Like,
if he's going to stand up there and talk to reporters like that, he may not want him in camp.
Yeah, you're not going to save any more money. He's not really going to pay, I don't think, a ton more. I mean, the number is what it is now, right? We're past the point. Unless Hendrickson comes out here for 45.
Which Hendrickson, it doesn't sound like, can even get like $10 million guaranteed or something. It sounds like the Bengals are just like, I don't know.
Yeah, so like, I mean, the number, like from Jerry's perspective, it's like, all right, look, the number is what it is. It's like either sign him now or sign him in 2 weeks. Like, all you're doing is having him in camp.
Whether the whether the Cowboys believe it or not, and whether it's accurate or not, Micah clearly views his leverage equal to Dax. Like, he views it as, you're just simply not going to refuse to pay me, and I'll call your bluff on it publicly. Just, Dak did the same thing last year. The first time he walked up to the podium, he was like, you know, I mean, it's a business. If this has got to go somewhere else, it's got to go somewhere else. And believe me, that was, I know with certainty, that was a calculated public chess move. Like, all right, here you go. Since you're going to talk like that, Jerry, here's this. And so, same sort of thing. I'm sure that Micah looks at it the same way of like, you're going to pay me. You have no choice. And I'll just aggressively, defiantly call out your bluff on this one, because you're not going to just refuse to pay me. And I think that he's probably right. They're probably not going to do that. They're probably not going to, like, this is, he's telling them, all right, I'll play chicken with you. I'm not moving.
They'll pay him. They'll pay him at the same time they paid the other guys, middle of August, somewhere around August 11th through the 19th.
Or the pregame show of the opener.
Or the pregame show of the opener.
That's what happened with Dak. Adam Schefter will probably recall that today at 9 o'clock.
Now, I mean, especially if he's going to continue to, if he's going to be out there.
Now, that will be interesting to see, is if the reason that also got pushed over the line is because Dak kind of had a deadline of, when the season starts, we're done. Like, we're not talking about this anymore. And so I wonder if Mike will say something like that. Like, all right, when the season's over, that's your last opportunity to get this done this year.
He also threw a shot at their numbers guy that apparently is only talking to David Mulugeta, the agent, because Steven says he hasn't, and Jerry says he hasn't. And he's like, yeah, they're a little in-between guy, whatever his name is. And I was like, damn.
Yeah, which he's referring to Adam Pacifica, their salary cap guy. And
is it Pacifica or Pra?
It's Pacifica.
Pra?
Pacifica.
R.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Adam is the cap guy. It's, again, when he says, you know, I don't take it personal because I know this is how things go. Well, like, that is also how things go. They typically do use Adam to get most of that work done. So, I mean, that's also falling in line.
And that has to be a strategy, too. Like,
yeah, I think a lot of times it's just initially like, he's going to be the one to tell you what can work. So it's, you just need to talk to him.
It comes across, though, as like, it's like if you're in a contract negotiation here in this building and you're only talking to Tim up until like a week before your deal expires. Tim is our assistant program director. And it's like, yo, man, where's Spittle? Where's you're not going to talk to me? It comes across as really disrespectful, although I'm sure that's the way they do it a lot, and I'm sure it's part of their plan.
We can ask Schefter about that at 9. Like, how common is it that other teams just use salary cap negotiators early in the process?
Yes.
You're right. It might be the norm. You know, it really might be the norm. Like, you don't have to deal with them until like they have a
taking
range.
Taking 90% there, 95%.
They have a range that they're allowed to go into. You're buying a car. Sales guy's got a range. And then you got to go to the guy in the back where I'm convinced nothing ever gets done. Right? You go to the guy in the back, and then they've got a number that they're allowed to to kick to, and you know you have rules you got to follow.
Trayvon then steps up to the microphone. Again, this was planned on their part, right? Micah was like, let's do this together. Was Trayvon expecting his fine for not rehabbing in Frisco?
No, I didn't expect that. That kind of hurt my feelings. But it's okay. Hopefully, I'll make it back in his senses.
And we got to understand where he's coming from. His brother just got cleared and he tore his ACL. Maybe came back 6 months, three, 4 months early.
Yeah.
Over at Alchemy, you know, I went over there with him. They got some of the best recovery.
Yeah, he came to check on me. Came to check with me, made sure I was doing all I was supposed to
do. At the end of the day, this is his business. His body is his body equity. He got to feel like he got to do his best for his body. And like all, because at the end of the day, if he's not available, what they going to do? Get rid of him. You know what I mean? So he got to keep his body up to par.
I'd be a little careful, though, if I was Micah, if this is the strategy. I don't know that you want to be up there looking. Nick talked about this yesterday, where he's like, I think the Cowboys are viewing those two as like, hey, this is the cautionary tale you could go down. And like he views them as the Cowboys view Diggs and Parsons as like almost tied together as like trajectories. And
why? Based on what? That's insulting to Micah Parsons.
Because they're up there talking like they're so tied to the hip. It's like the company you keep. What are we going to see when you get paid? I don't think it's a legit. I don't think that's a concern with Micah. But I also wouldn't have thought before he paid Diggs. I would not have anticipated that from Diggs either. Where I would have felt like, is he totally bought in? And
the fact that they're so tight, they're boys,
that they're doing all their joint interviews together and stuff. I mean, they're like a banana boat ride away from being Chris Paul and LeBron James.
They were basically up there yesterday, defying the Cowboy leadership.
Which is negotiations are negotiations. Yeah. Do what you got to do.
Sometimes they go public.
And do you support Trayvon with the rehab approach?
100%. It's his body. You know, if you feel like you have better, if you could get better treatment somewhere else, go somewhere else. He would not be the first guy to do this. And especially like...
Don't complain if you lose the incentive, though.
True.
The incentive... Okay, but no, losing the incentive and then being... Okay, did he lose the incentive or was he docked?
It's called a de-escalator. So it's in the contract that if he did not show up to the facility a certain percentage of the offseason, then he was going to lose the incentive.
But is he not getting a $500,000... Did he lose $500,000 out of his salary or did he not get a bonus?
So it's a semantics thing where it's... You could either describe it as... He lost money or he didn't earn but it's like the Cowboys are going to say he didn't earn it. Trayvon's going to say he lost it. Either way, it was if you don't hit it by this date, you're not getting this
money.
Let's
just say I have a $50,000 salary in my contract. That's my base deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't do what Trayvon did. Translate that for me.
No,
am I now making $0?
This would be on the books as if you made $50,000 last year. Next year, you're going to make $80,000 if you show up a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
You didn't show up that time. Now you're making $50,000 again. It's that.
Okay.
$500,000, which is not clearly like a massive pay cut in the grand scheme of a $20 million contract.
But. Right. It's not, but it's still a lot of money. And I agree with you. Like, you can't really complain. But what does it say about your team and your training? And when you have the NFLPA report card that comes out, gives you a C+ on that, and then you got people, players, high-priced players, top-tier players from your pay scale who are choosing to train and rehab somewhere else. That tells me a lot about what's going on there.
What's a cost of living raise? 2.5-3% generally? Like everybody everywhere generally does 2.5-3% just for the year changeover. Diggs's incentive is basically 2.5% of his contract. This is essentially like you went into the next year and you're not getting the cost of living raise.
I like this tone, though. You know, Trayvon can be moody. I was expecting him to be a lot angrier and more ticked off at Jerry. Yesterday, at least, they were calm. They were composed. I liked it. I found myself rooting for both of them yesterday and against Jerry Jones. More on what happened in Oxnard as we are off to a fast start for Cowboys training camp on your home for America's team. Brian brought us live at 8:40 from California, but the guys were shaken up yesterday over the passing of Ozzy Osbourne, and I was shaken up over the passing of Theo Huxtable. That's next on 105.3 The Fan. The news yesterday that the legend Ozzy Osbourne passing away at the age of 76, and that set off the group text.
Yeah, man, this was, I guess it wasn't stunning that Ozzy Osbourne passed away.
Turn this up, Peyton. This is so good, this one.
It's very good. It's a tremendous song. It wasn't stunning, I guess, that he passed away. There was, because he did a farewell concert about, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, it was his last. It was going to be his last Black Sabbath.
Are you ready to dive into the stories, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
The concert.
Yeah, and it was like a farewell concert. It had tons of,
was that where he was just like sitting in the chair?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You had tons of musicians that showed up to perform with him and Black Sabbath. And then it was like him and Sharon were just going to kind of do their thing. Now, they had a...
He had Parkinson's, right?
He had announced he had Parkinson's around like the COVID era kind of time. And then there were some rumors that like him and his wife had an end of life pact, and people were speculating, was he going to go and do some kind of assisted suicide in Europe?
What is an end of life pact?
Like, we agree to end our life this way kind of thing.
Oh.
Because, you know, like health issues. I mean, she's had her own health problems. He's had health problems, obviously. So there was some speculation about that. I don't think that actually came to play. I think Kelly, his daughter, said, nah, that's not, none of that's really true. But man, this is still, I mean, it's Ozzy Osbourne. It's one of the most influential musicians, certainly the most influential heavy metal musician there ever was. Maybe not the best, but the most influential for sure.
Yeah. I mean, when I think of Ozzy Osbourne, I think of two things. I think of this Crazy Train.
There's no Metallica without Ozzy, and you know, Metallica took it to another level, but there's no Metallica without Ozzy.
I think of this, and then I think of him biting the head off of the bat on stage when he thought it was fake.
And the reality show.
And reality TV.
Yeah, and that became like a whole other persona. Like, that became how he was known to a newer generation. It was like, oh, that's it. Laura does an Ozzy Osbourne impression. She doesn't even know it. Because she watched Hannah Montana, and one of the characters on there would put on sunglasses and go, Sharon, I'm so confused. So Laura runs around saying that. She has no idea what that's even a reference to.
One of the best, he did the Take Me Out of the Ball Game at the Cubs game. I mean, yes. You know, it's just, he was like the end of career for him. And it was obvious, like, you know, it was like, I always like chuckled when I heard him talk, because it was like, man, this guy has done
so many drugs.
Oh, like, just completely torpedoed.
The SNL bit back in the day used to be funny, where they were like, they did the skit where he would talk and he'd go, and then they'd be like, Ozzy, just sing it. And then he would have to sing whatever he was going to say, because they're like, all right, now we can understand.
Now we understand it. Yeah. It was crazy, because like, it was his voice when he sang was so much more clear than when, and I'm the opposite. I can't hear people when they sing. I can't. I don't understand the words. I need the lyrics.
But this is the greatest rock intro of all time.
See, that's what we were just discussing, because what's your name? Bobby had said that. And I was like, really?
Choppy Osbourne.
I was like, really? Is it? And I'm not disagreeing with you. I just like threw out, really? Better than Hell's Bells? Which is an AC/DC song, obviously, which we had to tell Peyton that it was an AC/DC song, I think.
Yeah, I knew that.
Undertaker.
It's great.
This is great.
It's atmospheric, though.
What do you mean?
Like the whole thing that this thing is trying to strike is like, all right, we're setting a tone here, whatever. Crazy Train still sets the same tone. Crazy Train musically is better. Because this is just dong, dong in the, for like 45 seconds, and then like these droning power chords.
They do dong for a while.
They do. And
there's
then
a lot of dong in.
Whereas Crazy Train, you get that manic scream from Ozzy at the start. Then you get the I, which is like passing through the stereo channels. You get the guitar riff from Randy Rhoads. It was so great. That's why Lil Jon and them did it for Trick Daddy. Let's go. It's iconic. It is the best intro ever.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would use this as a walk up if I was a pitcher. Trevor Hoffman. Like a little kick up that volume, man. Like, this is,
yeah.
You know, Thunderstruck is a really good one too. Yeah, but there's great intros, Baba O'Reilly, but yeah, I mean, if you want to say Crazy Train, I'm not gonna fight you on it.
I don't have much for Ozzy. My death that I was getting sentimental over was Malcolm Jamal Warner, Theo Huxtable drowning at the age of 54. I haven't seen extra details on this, on where or how it happened, but I just went down a Cosby Show rabbit hole of scenes involving Theo with the pirate or ugly shirt that he wore, him trying to cover up the earring in the room with dad, the economics lesson that you're teaching Julian right now of taking the monopoly of the Jeopardy money. But I think my favorite was Bill was sitting in the room with him and talking about life lessons. And at the end, Theo gives this heartwarming, sentimental response like, I may not want to be you, Dad. I may not want to be a physician. I want to be me. I want to be myself. And the crowd's like, oh, my God, I'm crying. And Bill goes, Theo, that's the dumbest damn bunch of, you know, and I just, it's an all time.
It's one of the best delivered sitcom lines of all time.
Right?
It's hilarious.
It's fantastic.
Both of them.
Yeah, because I mean, that show was on, you know, 8 o'clock. It was a staple on Thursday. 8 o'clock. And you know, every show that was like you saw the other TV networks. I mean, they didn't even bother. I went down a little rabbit hole like this morning on what was on at the same time.
Oh, no one would put up anything against them.
Dude, like CBS put 48 hours against them. That's like a, isn't that like a news show?
Yes.
Like a date exactly kind of like thing. One. Now, finally, Fox was like, hey, you know what? We're going to put The Simpsons ahead of them. So Fox did at the end. But that was 6 years in. You know, like that was the Cosby Show only went, I think, 8 years. So it was 6 years in. It was like, all right, you know, we got to find our footing somewhere. CBS had top cops. You know, ABC throwing out like Matlock in the winter.
Malcolm and Eddie was a good show too, which he was on with Eddie Griffin for like 5 years. But the thing I think of honestly, hit the lasting legacy of Theo Huxtable to me is whenever I hear anybody say 40 burger, I always think 40 women, because in the show, Theo Huxtable and his friend Cockroach, they would refer to girls as burgers.
Yeah.
So there was this whole episode like about how demeaning it was to call the girls burgers, or if they're like, it's a cute name. What's wrong with it? And so every 40 burger, I think of Malcolm Jamal Warner.
So two celebrity deaths that have happened this week with Ozzy Osbourne and Theo Huxtable. Bobby Belt with more car issues in the family, but it's not necessarily the vehicle.
No, this was, I didn't know.
By the way, Julian punishment update.
So yesterday he did the interior windows, washed all the interior windows.
Washed them?
Like cleaned it, yeah, like, just, you know, wiping the windows down, the windowsills.
Because you're starting to add on here by day. I thought he was just supposed to get the dust and
the blinds.
And the blinds.
He got that too.
Okay.
He got that. The dust of the blinds. A little bit harder to get off than I thought. It's like caked on there, you know. I hadn't done some of the blinds in a while.
So ever. Did he put up a fight?
No, he was joking around during it, you know, trying to, you know, like be stupid.
Okay.
So you know now today we could do a couple of things. As we see, today's Wednesday. It's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So we got five more days. So
we got baseboards and we got toothbrush, toilet scrub.
Baseboards, and we have the outside windows, too. He's got to do the outside windows. And now we're thinking, how did we forget mopping the floor?
You only have so many days. Hey,
you know, some of these are easy.
You guys are adding on to the sentence.
Listen,
here.
The
sentence was given.
The toilets are an easy
thing. I'm going to start defending him.
Is this a de-escalator or is this, what is this?
The toilets are easy, right? The toilets are easy. That should take a few minutes. Mm. So maybe we can mop the floors with the toilets.
So our issue yesterday is one where Kristen had sent me a photo like near the end of the show. And I was like, what the hell is this? Like, it looks like there's something like pieces of something in the backseat, but I don't know what it is. And I just sent it to Aiden. So he's going to try and throw it up on the fan cam. But did you guys know that the water cooler jugs that historically go up on top of it, like they've always been these giant plastic jugs or I don't know, I guess. All this this push to get rid of the plastic and different things like that. We are now getting glass jugs.
Glass?
5 gallon glass water cooler jugs. I didn't know these were a thing.
Why are you having them?
So Kristen is helping out a family we know, and she's helping them do their move and everything like that. And so they had asked her, like, hey, can you bring this over there? And so she put it in the backseat of the Explorer. I didn't know these things existed. And I didn't know how easy they were to shatter in the back seat if you went over just like a bump.
Oh my.
Not very fast. This is 5 gallons of water spilled all over the back seat, and all of these shards of glass are everywhere. And man, I mean, like, flat out shattered. Like, that had to have had a weak point in or something. And Hayden's got it up on the fan cam now. It was soaked. And so Kristen took it over to.
So it had all the water in it.
Yeah, all
full.
Oh,
dude, that is going to reek.
So Kristen took it instantly to the friends who were there. They were like, hey, go take it down to this place. Have them do it. We'll pay for it. Like, just do it, and they'll clean the car out, and they'll dry it out. She's like, okay. So she went in there, and she gave them very specific details of what to do. And then she was like, okay. Well, they went to the Rangers game last night. So I went, picked her up, dropped her off to get the car. She got in the car, immediately drove off to the Rangers game, didn't have time to check anything. But then the car's sitting there baking in the evening sun. And she said when they walked out, she's like, it reeked of mildew in the car.
Yeah, you got to open, you got to crack the windows to dry, really dry it out.
She opened it and she popped the bottom and the wheel well was still full of water. They didn't even clean it out. So she spent all last night, like she got home, she vacuumed, like got a shop vac and was like vacuuming out. She's like, I'm taking this back to them tomorrow. They're either giving us money back or they're doing the job over again. Because this isn't like, I told them what they needed to do.
So they went to the Ranger game without you yesterday.
Mm-hmm. We got a 4-pack of tickets. There's 5 of us in the house right now as Jacob is in the house for the next couple weeks until he goes to the military. And so.
Whoa.
What?
The military?
Yeah. It literally just became official yesterday because he wasn't like, he was supposed to do it, but he's like kept going like, well, maybe I'll do it. He says he's going to do a lot that he doesn't do. So I wasn't anticipating this. It was actually going to happen.
Wow.
Army. What branch?
Army.
Oh, no.
And Chris is allowing this?
Yeah, he's going to Army because the welding stuff that he's been doing, he's going to the Army. He's going to be a welder in the Army. And so that's what he's doing. He's going to be working with, I don't know. They told me
yesterday. Go weld a ship in the Navy. Coast Guard, baby. That's He'll work on Grapevine Lake.
See, he wants to do Army, and we got a lot of Air Force people in our lives that kept telling him, like, Air Force, dude, Air Force, Air Force. And so he was starting to get frustrated and was like, I guess I'm just going to the Air Force. And Chris is like, no, you're not just going to do what people this is your life. Make the decision.
Back to the Cowboys inside the Star 720 commercial-free expressway. We'll chop it up. We have another Billy Currington concert ticket giveaway. Brian Broaddus, Adam Schefter, Brett Boone. Back to back to back. But the Tolos tipped us off, and I have purposely stayed away from listening to this. We go through the G-Bag Texas Rangers interview next.
Are you ready to dive into the story, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.